Rob
Stone
from Fox Sports.
Hey guys, this is Cole
Liker. Hi, I'm Neil Collins.
You are listening to the Unused Substitute.
The Unused Substitute.
And you're listening to the Unused Substitutes.
Get off the pitch!
Hey there, little Red Riding Hood!
Ball's gonna bounce, Dennis free in the box. Bicycle kick! Goal! Rowdies! What a play! What a shot! And it's 1-0 Rowdies!
Good evening, everybody. It's Thursday night at 8 o'clock, and you are listening to the Unused Substitutes live on Radio St. Pete, part of the Beautiful Game Network, and sponsored by Roughneck Scarves and Golden Goal Press. My name is Matt, and on the other end of the internet is my co-host for your Rowdies Talk Radio, the co-pastor for the Green and Gold Gospel, a guy who is... Oh, I totally forgot what I was going to say. I'm just going to say, good evening, Stephen. How are you doing?
I'm going to say, you were on a roll there, and I'm not sure where it was going, but I'm kind of disappointed you lost your train of thought.
I had something right there in my head, and then it totally vanished, which, you know, at my age is not uncommon.
Yeah. I was just going to say, it's like, I'm not going to, like, you know, self-promote, so I don't know where you were going with that. I'm genuinely curious. To a certain degree, I will say I miss you. I miss not doing this live, only because obviously all the tournaments are now over. The Gold Cup's over. USA rightfully finished in second place. The Women's World Cup is over. USA rightly finished in first place. Copa America, I have no idea. I think there's something going on in Africa. I can't tell you one thing, which, of course, I know there are a lot of people out there that are probably going to be mad at me for the couple of things I just said, but oh well. We're a Rowdies podcast.
Somewhere out there across this nation, someone from the U.S. women's team is incredibly drunk right now. I don't know who, but I just know that
one,
they are.
Someone?
At least.
People. Somebody's, some women's folk, rightfully so, are still partying the night away.
Oh, yeah. I'm insanely jealous of them. I know it's been the weirdest week, because for the last month or so I've pretty much been at Shamrock every other day for a World Cup or a Gold Cup match, and we capped it off Sunday with we had a rear projection screen outside, and the weather had broken, the humidity was gone, so we just pulled up a bunch of tailgate chairs and sat there and watched the Gold Cup final in the parking lot, which we had shut down after the World Cup game and turned into a big block party. It was a not unexpected result, I'll say, for the U.S. men, but it was a nice way to sit there and view the game.
Yeah, no, I'm kind of jealous of the fact that you get, you know, summers off, so you got to enjoy all of this in immense detail. I was very much jealous of that. I on the other hand, through the graciousness of the fact that I work in basically a call center, this was the only time during the year that we get to watch anything but a random company-produced little PowerPoint slideshow thing repeating the same stuff over and over again. We got to watch at least the USA games during the Women's World Cup. So that was cool that I didn't miss a single minute of the Women's World Cup run for the United States. That was pretty awesome. But... yeah, now we're back to the regular grind. Boring.
We'll find some times or some ways to get together again at Shamrock, I'm sure. Won't be an issue. But you mentioned it. We are a Rowdies podcast, so we are going to talk about what really is now, we have to start calling them routine road wins. Like, this is a team that, wins road games, which is good because second half of the season, including this weekend, well, now we finished up one over the weekend. We still have 9 more road games compared to 7 home games for the rest of the season. So let's hop in and talk about this one. This was part of our giant smorgasbord of soccer last Sunday. The Rowdies went and played Swope Park. We'll now call them Swept Park because we soundly beat them both games for the year. And the Rowdies win 3-1 to the shock of nobody. It actually was a game. I know if you were watching on TV, it looked like a closed-door scrimmage. But it actually was a game. Goals by Tejada, by Guinzati, and by Malik Johnson. And Swept Park put a mark on the scoreboard with a sort of late penalty. It's hard to do good, bad, ugly for this because there really wasn't any bad or ugly that I could think of. I went back and rewatched it today, and it really... You go out there, and especially in the first goal, because it's really kind of reminiscent to Tejada's goal against Bethlehem Steel, where they just they left him unmarked in the box, and the team knew. It looks like if you go back and watch it, they knew how Swope Park was going to play, and they just said we're going to keep doing this thing until we get it to work, because that goal basically comes off them trying to cycle the ball around from left to right a few times, and then sending it in, and there's Tejada just wide open in the box again. At some point, teams will. Learn to stop doing that. Hopefully not this weekend. But it was as routine of a win as you could hope to see from your team.
Yeah, no, there was it's funny because like that's one of the things that I pointed out on Twitter after that match that I think is still really, really true is that it is incredible the number of clubs at this level in the Eastern Conference especially that cannot keep up with the level of pressure that we apply for 90 minutes. Like, if we choose, you know, assuming we actually choose to apply pressure for 90 minutes, it is amazing the number of teams that just, they have no capability of stringing together one or two passes enough to at least kind of fight for possession of the ball. Like, I mean, honestly, let's face it, it's pretty much New York Red Bulls, and maybe you can give a little bit of hint to North Carolina. Indy, of course, they played down a man, so it's really hard to judge them when we faced them earlier. But, like, that's it. I mean, realistically, right? Like, that's the only teams that were ever able to really stand up to what we did or what we do. Most of these games have been pretty kind of snooze-festy almost. I mean, we've gotten really comfortable for a lot of games this year where it's kind of felt like we've run a lot of teams off the pitch, which, I mean, is great. Don't get me wrong. I want to ride the wave. I mean, obviously, but it's interesting. Like, I don't know. It's become a situation that if you are a, like, say, bottom half of the of table team, okay, and you're coming up to face the Rowdies, it's really a game plan problem. How do you play a team that's going to be sprinting at you for at least 75 to 80 minutes?
Right.
You know, you have to be absolutely on point with your passing for the first one or two passes, because even if you steal that ball away, you might get one pass, but we're sprinting at you with everything we've got to shut you down and take the ball right back. Like, it is so hard to do that. Like, in general, and especially considering the level that we're at right now, it's hard for the players at this level, for most clubs, that could be able to handle that type of pressure. I mean, realistically, that's why we've only had, like, New York be able to match us for pace, because it's an amazing group of athletes up there. But, you know, when you're talking Swope Park without really anybody from SKC playing down for them, at least starter-wise, because, you know, they played, what, 2 games this past week, so from if memory serves. So, you know, they're not going to have the athletes capable with the teenagers to keep up with what we're doing with 28-year-olds. Like, it's just not going to happen. It isn't. So, I mean, it's in a lot of ways, as after about 10 minutes watching that game, you know, against aptly named Swept Park, about 10 minutes into that game, you just knew that, okay, we're going to win. It'll be about two or three goals easy, and it's really not going to look like we're going to be under any threat. And it kind of played out that way. I mean, if we're being honest.
You mentioned a couple teams in there, New York and North Carolina, some of the few teams, Indy maybe, able to kind of keep up and maybe counteract a little bit. I will say, and you know, we didn't see it in the first game where we played them this year. It was their first game of the season. But this weekend's opponent, and when we get into the stats, it might seem a little bit more clear. But I think Pittsburgh, as they have kind of grown over the season and developed their chemistry with some of the new players they've added this year, and I think they've got a pretty good chance of,
oh yeah,
not necessarily keeping up, but they are defensively very strong as well. So,
oh yeah.
And are pretty good with their passes. So instead of doing like good, bad, ugly, I just kind of want to break down a couple of the big stats and kind of where we are at this point. So this was a modern era record, sixth road win in one season.
Hey, everybody, let's party!
Still unbeaten it on the road. 11-1-6 overall, 5-1-4 at home, 6-0-2 on the road, currently on a three-game win streak, 3-1-1 in the last five. The only real change we saw, the only difference in some of the previous games was we kind of made a surprise swap at goalkeeper, which we gave the third string, Macklin Robinson, got in for his first action of the season. I think he was on the bench for one of the Open Cup games, maybe, but had not dressed for a league game yet. Got the start. You know, it's kind of surprising. McCarthy has played every minute of the season so far. If there's a game where you're going to suddenly swap out your keeper, though, that, you know, Swope Park. No offense to the mighty Rangers of Swope, but this is a game where you might take a chance with that, and it definitely paid off. He had several big time, good looking saves. Stopped a penalty, gave up the rebound, but stopped the penalty at first. So it was a good day overall for him. What was your impressions of the way he played? Because it's really the first time I've seen him.
Not for a debut, he was fantastic. I mean, there a couple of those saves were not routine by any means. Like, they were some really good shot stopping going on, and I was thoroughly impressed that he was able to take what a lot of people probably took as a sleeper game, as far as, like, I mean, obviously we don't, there's nothing specifically going on in the background that we know of that would have caused, you know, a keeper change for this match, except for maybe it was just something as simple as we expected to kind of roll over this team, and we figured we'd give the kid a chance to play against people his own age. Ha ha ha. And yeah, I mean, that's the thing, is that I think that we unexpectedly took a couple of, I don't even want to call them defensive lapses. Like, you know, they played a couple of chances up the field, and it's going to happen. I mean, it's pretty much it's really hard to keep a team from not shooting at least once. So, you know, it's going to happen every now and then, probably. So I thought the fact that he was up for that and that he didn't fall asleep in that kind of context of, again, like 10 minutes into that game, we're expecting to win that game like 3-4-0, like it's going to be a breeze. And all of a sudden, like, you know what, it's like the 30th minute, he's taking this like rocket of a shot. Great on him to be up for the moment in a game that by all means was always going to be a win. And he came up big, because those were some, like I said, those were some impressive saves. And so all the kudos to him. Like, that was absolutely fantastic. And I mean, ultimately, when you look at the rest of the team, like with what we did this past weekend, I mean, it was pretty routine. Seb scores, Tejada scores, pretty much stereotypical goals for both.
Mm-hmm.
You know, Malik doing some dancing around, and Seb does a great back heel to give him the ball to feed. It's like routine. It's like, this is what the Rowdies are, and this is the types of goals they always score, and this is just what we do. And it was just amazing, because that was as stereotypical of a 2019 Rowdies performance as we've seen up to this point.
Yeah.
Like if you were to use an example game of what has 2019 Rowdies look like, this is the model of what that looks like.
Yep, Tejada getting fed in the box, Guinzotti getting a penalty, and then Malik Johnson, who we just started seeing. Like, I can't stop watching the loop of that that goal. And to go back to what you were saying earlier about the pressure, watching that, the whole thing really starts with Poku putting pressure on the keeper on a goal kick, forcing him to go to his right with it, where it ends up at one of the feet of one of their players, but then shortly goes out and in for a throw, which then sets up that whole little sequence of events that's maybe the most beautiful little sequence we've seen the Rowdies play in this season. And then Johnson five holes Dick for the third and final goal. Man, it was beautiful. I mean, we heard a lot about what we expect, what the team thought they'd see from Malik once he was ready, and I think this is what we were you know, kind of hoping and waiting to see. So going back overall, like the key stats, and I've got to give credit to this. I didn't go and pull these out myself and analyze this. Chris Hockman on Twitter, you can give him a follow at Chris H Sport. Rowdies won 60% of the aerial duels, 76% passing accuracy in the opposition half, had 3 goals from 4 shots on target, 8 of 9 shots in the box. I mean, I feel bad saying it, but this was a training session almost.
Yeah, I mean, that's the thing, right? Like, we're looking at this going, this is routine, and to a point, like, you kind of almost can cross the line and say that it was a training session type game. I mean, if this is what we do, and this is what we've done, and this is going to be the game plan going forward continuously, which I don't see any reason why it won't be, yeah, this pretty much is training ground stuff. I mean, Tejada getting a header goal again. I mean, it's what was the joke of the year? It's like, shortest player with the longest hair, he scored a goal. Like, it's kind of hilarious. Like, he keeps doing it. How do these defenders keep losing the shortest guy on the field to allow him to do headers?
He's just standing
hysterical.
There unmarked, center of the box, right in front of the goal, and it's just it's like when you're playing a season on FIFA and you've just kind of worked out this, okay, these guys work well together and I can usually pull this play off. That's what it felt like watching that game.
Yeah, exactly.
So your man of the match?
I'm going to go. This is hard because I almost feel like this game deserves two different categories almost. Like highlight moment versus like man of the match. Because for me, man of the match for this game, I thought, was Steinberger. And I know that's going to come out of left field, considering we scored 3 goals with 3 different goal scorers and some beautiful interplay that led to the third one. And I know everybody's going to look at me and go, how do you not give an award out to it? Guys, hold on. Hold your horses. Steinberger dictated that play during the 90 minutes. He set the tone for that high press. And his work rate, controlling the middle of the field, completely shutting down their defensive mids from getting any kind of possession or momentum going. To me, he's the reason why that engine rolled the way that it did this past weekend. So I thought for like most valuable performance, man of the match type of deal, I'm actually giving it to him.
All right. And your highlight moment is the Malik goal.
Yeah, I guess.
The whole way that's set up, like that's, yeah.
And not necessarily the finish, obviously, because the finish wasn't anything crazy. I mean, he nutmegged the goalkeeper, that's fine. But the back heel itself, I think that was just the highlight moment of it. Because, hey, look, a little bit of flair, that's what I always preach. And yeah, look what happens when you try it.
The flick into the back heel to set that up was really incredible to watch, considering some of the what we saw passing for, like, you know, attacking soccer in the last few years.
Yeah. And that's the thing. I'm preaching this. I'm going to keep preaching it. I'm going to keep saying it when I have the opportunity. We need more of it.
Yeah.
Because if we're going to beat teams, I mean, you look at it. What's the difference between what we did the last couple of weeks compared to playing up a man on the road at Indy when we draw 0-0 without getting a shot, like, on goal? What's the difference there? The difference there is in Indy, we tried nothing for flair.
Mm-hmm.
Nothing. That's the difference. That's what it looks like when you start trying some things. Leo Fernandez from the outside of the box trying to dribble in and get drawing a penalty kick because he's trying to split defenders and nutmeg people. Hello? That's what you need to do. These are the types of things that you need to be able to break down defenses that are going to bunker against you. Because, again, this is something else we've talked about. It's something else that's going to be important. When we're playing these teams that know they can't keep up with us physically, they're going to start bunkering down. And when you start playing teams like, say, a Louisville, because you know for a fact that that team, which may or may not be coming, like, a little bit of a rebound, because Louisville's always been a stronger team in the second half of the season than the first half. So, like, when you start seeing them, the fact is that they do not have a lot of confidence right now. So when you look at a team like that, like, if we have to play a team in that middle playoff position, like a Nashville, like a Louisville, they're probably going to end up bunkering. And those are going to be really, really good teams that are going to be bunkering. So you're going to have to be able to open up the playbook and open up the flair to create the opportunities. You have to create your own space. That's what it's all going to come down to. And I'll say this. You mentioned something earlier. This is something that I don't want to say bothers me, but it's something that's going to be a worrying trend to a certain degree. We score all of our goals inside the box. Now, granted, I get the fact that at this level of the game, that's probably going to be true for literally every team anywhere on the entire planet. I get it.
Yeah.
But there has to be more shooting from outside the box. We're going to, like, especially when we start going into the playoff, you know, when we get later in the year, when we start getting into the realm where the playoff seeding is going to matter and teams are really going to be fighting for those specific seeds, maybe to try and host a game or whatnot, or maybe even getting into the playoffs, we have to be able to open up defenses a little bit. And if we're not kind of like practicing that in kind of game time situations now,
right,
we're not going to be ready for that in September and October. That's something that if I had a wish that I think that I would wish we did a little more often, just to kind of get into a groove that teams can't really game plan against us. Because if you think you're going to score, you know, the types of goals that we've been scoring the last couple of weeks against a team like Indy, against a team like North Carolina, who we've already lost to, I mean, I'm sorry. I mean, you got a team upcoming here in Pittsburgh that this week, if you think you're just going to be able to walk balls into the net week after week after week, I got another thing coming for you.
No, I mean, you just take a look at the schedule right now, and I meant to go back to this earlier when we were talking about why there may have been a goalkeeper change. You know, we were coming off a road trip to Bethlehem, a top 10 versus top 10 battle with Ottawa, and then you had Swope Park, and then your next four games are Pittsburgh away, St. Louis at home, Red Bull away, Charleston away. I don't want to say Swope Park is kind of a trap game, but, you know, you make a change at keeper, you know he's going to be on the ball out there, and you know, at that point maybe it puts a little note in the defense's mind to stay a little bit more alert because you've got a different keeper back there. If that may have been some of the motivation for it, but yeah, you know, there are some, we're not playing Swope Parks anytime. Well, we're not playing them again this year, but you know, any team around that level, for quite a while. You know, we get Birmingham Legion at home in August.
Yeah, that's a month away.
Yeah. And, you
I
know,
mean,
that's,
yeah, you're playing four solid teams 4 weeks in a row.
So we'll talk about some of those later. All right. So our notable, was there anything else you wanted to throw in about the game? before?
No. Did you have a player of the week or a moment of the week or anything specific about?
So I'm gonna go with the Malik goal again as the highlight moment of the game. I really liked what Jan Ekra did in this game. I might go that way just to put another name out there. But it's hard to pick one person in one of these games because. Ooh, I could get FOTMOB out and see what they did.
Oh, goodness.
You want me to do that?
Hey, it's up to you. We don't have a whole lot of topics tonight, so I'm okay with it.
We can kill some time. All right, let me pull this up here. Let's see.
This is one of those things where it's kind of funny because, like, again, like we talked about this a while ago, we're not playing two games a week right now. So trying to fit programming into an hour-long show when there's only one, like, only two games to talk about, not, like, three or four, it's thought harder in some ways.
at least the team that we're playing this week, we haven't played them, you know, within the last five games, so there's actually a chance, like beginning of the year, because this was the first game for Pittsburgh when we played them earlier in the year. It was really kind of impossible to do a preview, but at least now we've got some info. Oh, that's interesting. Okay. Your man of the match according to FOTMOB. With an 8.4 rating.
You want me to guess?
Yeah, who do you think got an 8.4 out of that game?
Sebastian Guinzotti,
dead on.
Don't doubt me. I know what I'm doing here, sir. I know. I'm real smart. I got some good genes in my genealogy.
There's a tie for second with Juan Tejada and Macklin Robinson with 7.9. Ekra and Malik with a 7.6, Caleb Richard 7.5, Tarek Morad 7.3, Dom Oduro 7.0, Leo Fernandez 6.9, Diakite 6.6. Your man of the match, Zach Steinberger, was the lowest rated player according to FOTMOB with a 5.6.
It's because FOTMOB's ratings are bogus. Ha!
Fake ratings. All right, so moving on, the other notable games that we were keeping an eye on last weekend, throughout the week, because there were some midweek games as well. Pittsburgh, our opponent for this weekend, beat Bethlehem 1-0 at home. Red Bull 2 and Ottawa played to a 1-1 draw, and Louisville won 2-1 over Nashville. This week coming up, there's not a whole lot of top 10 versus top 10s. It's a whole lot of top playoff teams versus non-playoff teams at this point. I do have two games to keep an eye on during the week. I must have messed up I know the first one's right. The second one I must have messed up here. I'll check it in a second. Charlotte is playing St. Louis. St. Louis just exiting the Open Cup last night, but coming home with the, I think it's $25,000 prize for the last lower division team to go out. New Mexico went out as well, but St. Louis got the prize money because they beat two MLS teams. New Mexico only beat one to get to where they were. Charlotte playing St. Louis. Charlotte, if you remember, has had a horrible season, has worked their way up to 11th, 1 point out of playoff position. So while it's not a top 10 versus top 10, they could hop back into the top 10 with a win over St. Louis. St. Louis has three losses and two draws in their last five games. They had to come from 2-0 down to draw Loudoun United. And you and I have kind of talked about this. St. Louis has four games in hand over the two teams that can overtake them right now.
Yeah.
In the end, it can balance out.
Four games.
In the end, it can balance out, but I would not be surprised if St. Louis screws around and misses the playoffs and Charlotte takes that spot.
Did you watch them play Atlanta, by the way, last night?
Charlotte?
In the Open Cup?
No.
St. Louis.
No, I didn't.
They look good. They look really good. I'm not at all worried about St. Louis. I think they've taken a month off of their heads a little bit because they play so few games that they were benching a lot of players because that's the thing. Okay, you're right. They haven't won a lot of games recently. Look at who they have drawn. Like, they're drawing the top teams. I mean, it's funny because they're kind of losing to the bottom half teams, but they're drawing the top ones. I'm not worried about them at all. I think they'll be just fine. I think they've shifted their focus a little bit. They have plenty of games in hand to make it up. I think they'll be all right. So for any St. Louisans hearing me, I'm sure that they're going to be perfectly happy and thrilled and content to hear that. I honestly think they'll be fine.
We'll see. I'm not as confident in them as you are. I think they're a lot better team than 10th place right now. I mean, they were pretty good beginning of the season, but things have not been going their way. I mean, I think they lost to Hartford in this stretch.
They've lost. I think they lost to Loudoun at one point, but then they like draw Indy and like drew Louisville or something like that. So it's like the results are kind of weird in that 5-game stretch. Like it's been some weird games, but I like I said, I think they'll be fine.
I don't think they've won since like I think it was April. I don't remember if I sent that to you in our conversation. They haven't won since like near the end of April, and they've only won twice I think since we've played them. So, I mean, I know we're looking at kind of like, you know, last five here in the table, but this run, they're kind of a slump has been stretched out for a little bit now. But anyway, here is your current traditional table, as we're calling it. The Rowdy's still on top, 18 played, 39 points. Indy, 5 points back, 2 games in hand. Red Bull, 2, 5 points back, same number of games played as us. North Carolina FC, 17 games, 31 points. Nashville, 18 games and 29 points. Louisville City, 18 and 29 as well. Ottawa, 17 and 28. Pittsburgh, this weekend's opponent, 16 games played, 25 points. Charleston, 17 and 23. St. Louis, 15, 21. And then your bottom of the table, you're out of playoff contention at this point. Charlotte, Bethlehem, Loudoun, Memphis, Atlanta, Birmingham, Swept Park, and Hartford Athletic. Even if St. Louis stays up, it still wouldn't shock me if Charlotte gets in there somehow. Charleston could have a little problem.
Here's where I'm not high on Charlotte. Yes, they've had a streak of games. I mean, granted, again, they've been on a run. There's no question about it. I mean, there's no debating that.
They've been on a solid run. Like that's been a huge difference.
They've also played the second most games in the league so far. So like
they played the most. No one's played more than them.
They've played so many games that they're trying desperately to play catch up. And they're doing anything they can to make themselves relevant. The problem is that if like St. Louis wins, say, 2 of the 4 games in hand, that gap becomes like 7 points?
Yeah.
With 2 games in hand. Like, I mean, I can't give a lot of credence. I mean, you look at the fact that at 19 games played with Charlotte, at 20 points, when you look at the teams ahead of them, Charleston has 2 games in hand and a 4-point lead. Like, it would take something monumental, I think, for Charlotte to sniff a chance. You never know.
I'm going to partially to help my friend who I met last year in Charlotte, Ben, the Soccer Goose from Talking Jacks and from the Amateur Hour podcast. He made the call when they switched coaches, went back to their previous head coach, that he promised that Ben did, not the coach, that Charlotte would make the playoffs, and I'm gonna take his side, especially if they win this weekend.
Well, what was it,
St. Louis?
I need to start writing down predictions that we do, because I even forgot what our score predictions were for this last week. I made a comment when we were comparing what teams did we think were going to be going like staying up in the playoffs and which teams would drop down potentially. I know Charleston was my target team for collapsing, but I forget. Who did we say for the teams that we thought could make it up?
Loudoun's only played 14 games. St. Louis. So they were one of the ones that we said maybe if they. Because, you know, they're going to be playing their home games in their actual, like, home stadium for the last half of the season. And they'll have a lot of, it was them and Hartford played a bunch of road games to start the year. If they can find some good home form, I think Loudoun's got a chance. Hartford doesn't have a chance in hell. To me, really, your two major ones are Loudoun, just because they've only played 14 games. They maybe, if they catch a run there. And Charlotte, to me, are your top ones. Bethlehem's, you know, right there too, but they've played more games than we have, and have 20 fewer points. So I don't see it happening for them. Loudoun and Charlotte, I think, might be the only two.
I'm just chuckling because I'm getting deja vu of thinking that maybe I picked Charlotte as a team to watch for a thing, and here I am, like, kind of degrading their chances. So, like, 2 or 3 weeks later. So I almost have to go back and listen to the shows and write some of this down. Yeah.
I'm just saying, keep an eye on me, because you know who else is up in Charlotte?
Mr. Mad Adam himself.
Exactly. If anyone can single-handedly inspire his team, his adopted new hometown team to the playoffs, it's going to be Adam Martin.
You hear that, Mr. Martin?
Might the be pressures. The most positive person I know.
The pressure's on you, sir.
I mean, I call myself the Infernal Optimist, but Adam, to remind me, I still got to send him, I still owe him a scarf. I'm so behind on this. Him and Perkins, I got to get their scarves in the mail this week. I got to remind myself to do that.
Yes.
I know. I'm a very bad person. There's no sugarcoating that.
You're such a bad podcast veteran.
I am. All right, let's take a look. Our points per game table, a little bit changed, but not much. The Rowdies are back on top. 2.17 points, just edging out Indy at 2.13. Red Bull 2 in third, 1.89. North Carolina 4th, 1.82. Ottawa 1.65. Nashville and Louisville at 1.61. Pittsburgh 1.56. St. Louis 1.4. Charleston 1.35. There's really no movement, really no big trends hopping out here. I mean, the two things, looking at the two tables, number one, again, you've got to be scoring goals. You got to have that positive goal differential to be in the top 10, because every team up there does. Even Charleston and St. Louis just barely, with 1 and 2 each. If you're looking at the points per game table, if you're not earning more than a point and a third from a game, you're going to have an early off season. End of October is going to be the end of it for you. It looks like the two key factors you can gauge everything on. Anything from the table hopping out at you?
Ottawa had a good week there. They actually improved by two positions on points per game versus straight up overall table. So Ottawa's kind of doing good. They're kind of finding their form and their feet a little bit. One big thing is our gap got a little bit of a help this week because Indy had the week off.
Right.
So that kind of helped us, not just in overall, but in points per game, kind of separating out. But now they still technically have two games in hand, so it's not like we've created like an infinite gap yet. They could still technically, we could just sit on our hands and they could still pass us. So
yeah, they are, I was going over the schedule. They are our last home game for the year in October. That's going to be a big night.
I mean, maybe. I mean, if finishing in first place versus second place means anything to you, then yes, it'll be a whole lot of big, giant, massive deal. If you're like me, I don't think it's going to matter much.
In any other season, it would be, you know, the almost like the deal breaker, because of the way we've been on the road. You'd have the chance of going on the road later in the playoff rounds. But the way we've been this year, it's not something that bothers me, except it would be nice to claim that regular season championship. We never did that in NASL. It would be nice to take that going into the playoffs.
Yeah, I mean, it'd be at least just for a change of pace. But I mean, yeah, I don't put much credence in it because it doesn't mean anything.
All right, so moving on to our team and league news. There really isn't much in the way of league news put out there. Sebastian Guinzotti, number one, had scored a goal on Sunday. Number two had a birthday on Monday, and then it was, Tuesday, Wednesday, he popped up in Team of the Week. Everything's coming up Guinzotti. Nice for him. There are some interesting activities going on around some of the home games coming up. July 20th is Throwback Night. It's also going to be the Skyway Casuals annual bus trip up to Al Lang. And it's going to be packed. Like we were selling a bunch of tickets during the Women's World Cup and Gold Cup matches. It's going to be a good time. I got a little bit of info from the team on some of these games. On the 20th, Throwback Night, celebrate everything old school with the Rowdies, including players from the 70s, 80s, 90s, as well as the modern era. Pre-game autographs, photo ops, and more will take place on this night. Bring out a group of friends to relive the original Rowdies. What's the one throwback slash retro thing you most want to see?
That's a weird question for a kid that's less, that's under 30.
Oh, sure. Rub it
in. Wow. What's the number one throwback thing? I mean, is there really...
Like, what player, what...
I don't know. Most of the guys love us still. I mean, Arango still goes to games even without being invited. And
right.
He just goes because he loves it. Sure, same thing with Ristov. He just shows up. I mean, shoot, we were talking last week about the fact that Karishi's still showing up, supporting the guys and keeping tabs of what's going on.
Right.
I don't know. It's hard to say. I mean, I know Perry for a fact still keeps tabs of what's going on. He still loves what's happening here. So I don't know if there's anything in particular I could point out to something that I would want, only because obviously I don't have a connection to the older team, and obviously really not the indoor team either for that matter. Like, okay. How about this? If there was one person that I would love to be able to shake hands with one more time, and I know, well, I can't say I know, but I would bet it probably won't happen. I would love a chance to shake hands and say thank you to Ricky Hill.
Okay. Okay.
If there was one person that I could see again, that's the person that I would like to see again.
So I'm going to throw a couple out here. One we've jokingly speculated about, but I would still like to see it happen. I want to see Hoops McGee.
Yes.
I just to know that, you know, someone did watch that thing finally. So, you know, you ever watch like TV shows and movies? It's always like, you know, the kids that are scared of the Easter Bunny or Santa when they go to the mall or whatever. My daughter was terrified of mascots. Even like when we go to Disney, she, you know, freaked out when the characters came around until she met Hoops McGee. Hoops was the first one she ever would like go up and take a picture with and not scream her head off at. So I'd like to see that come back. You mentioned Perry. I'd love to see Perry back in the stadium for a game. I'm going to psychically connect with our writer, our stats checker, our guy that keeps us credible, Jake Nutting, and I'm going to say Takuya Yamada. Let's bring him back.
Oh, that's a great one.
Let's bring Yamada back. Ricky Hill would be cool too. I wouldn't mind them. I don't know, you know, I don't know if it's a year or two away if they would do it, but reuniting the championship team. Possibly, not to say don't do it now, but it would be cool to do to recognize that. I think Perry and Yamada. Like if I had to go like old school Rowdies, new school Rowdies, or you know maybe Frankie Sanfilippo shows up again, would be kind of cool. We haven't seen him in a while. That'd be nice too. Yeah, we could do that. That could work out. It'll be interesting. It sounds like they're really putting some time and effort into planning this out. If it's the same people who did the Rowdy Bunch video, then I will say it will be extremely well planned and executed.
That video was fun.
Can we just play the music for a second?
Sure.
Because the song's fantastic, even if you don't get the whole video.
You don't have to ask permission. It's your show.
Coaching made the world. He had a flare with hair of gold, unlike the others, and there was one named Curls. Then there's a captain whose name was Adi, and a couple guys on loan from the UK, some midfielders and defenders. Came to
That is amazing. That's incredible.
And then
I can picture a whole bunch of like Ray's interns in this crowded little sound booth who got told they had to sing that song.
Oh, God.
I could just see it right now. But that whole thing is absolutely great content. That was great.
I loved it. They did a really great job in the post-production process of editing that enough that you can't tell it's Ryan Sudol singing. And then the long rumored Friends video leaked this afternoon as well. I'm not going to go back and play that one again because it was just the instrumental music. But that was very well done as well too.
What's funny is obviously we had heard a couple things as the reason why that one didn't show up, which is disappointing. But
right.
I thought that would have been amazing to have watched. I thought the team that put that one together, from what I understand, was Sawyer, Heather, and Becca. I thought they did a great job with putting that one together too. I thought that was brilliantly done. So no, it's so much fun watching creativity on the social media channels. Especially when you have a team that's winning, like that combination's hard to beat when you have a winning team on the field and a winning team on social media. That's everything you want. Realistically, that's what the most you can do, right? Like as a soccer club, that's about as good as you can get. So I love it. I love the effort. And I love the work that's been done.
Yeah, I kind of made the joke earlier that it's one of the rare examples where the remake is better than the original, because way back, longtime listeners, I'm sure will remember that episode 21 of this here fine podcast was titled The Rowdy Bunch, and I did a graphic that looked like that, only with Ricky Hill and the players, just because those were all the players that we had on the roster at that time. Like, literally, that was everybody associated with the Rowdies at that point in the offseason, and I just figured, hey, it works. We'll fit it into the picture. Luckily for everybody, neither Dan or I sung because...
You would have broken all the speakers.
I just had a flashback to when we had to call into the now defunct tailgate show for Fort Lauderdale, and we had to sing the Strikers fight song after a incredibly rare and undeserved Rowdies loss to Fort Lauderdale. It was awful. It was awful. All right, so that's throwback night coming up. August 24th. Likely to sell out, I'm going to say. Georgie bobblehead night. I'm looking forward to that one. I still need to get my daughter her ticket for that so she can get a bobblehead as well.
Yeah, that's going to be a pretty amazing giveaway.
August 31st, I just saw this one today. Didn't know this was a thing that was going to happen, but it looks like it's legit. Matt Pickens is going to retire at the end of the season and be Nashville's goalkeeper coach when they go into MLS. So Nashville is going to come to Al Lang on August 31st. It'll be the last time you'll see Pickens play at Al Lang. So coming out and see Matty. This might be the last chance, I guess, I'll get to have him autograph the gloves I got a couple years ago. I mean, I guess we could see him in Open Cup maybe, but who knows if we'd see Matty that night. So that'll be out there. But before all those games happen, we've got a road trip to make this weekend up to Pittsburgh, where, if I remember correctly, looking at the poll a little while before we came on air, the Tampa Bay-created Cuban sandwich is leading the whatever the hell they call that from Pittsburgh, 80-20%. So clearly, scientifically proven that the Rowdies will win this weekend, which will be a nice result. We played Pittsburgh back our second game of the season, their first game of the season. Since they came here, they are 6-2-7 overall. They're unbeaten at home, 4 wins and 4 draws. They are 4-1-0 in their last 5. Leading scorer is Nico Brett with 5 goals and 15 appearances. They've got 3 players tied with 4 behind him. Most assists, Canardo Forbes and Ryan James have 4 each in 16 appearances. Most shots, Steven Dos Santos. I think he was with Ottawa before. I know he's with the Canadian team. I think it was Ottawa. With 29. Canardo Forbes has created the most chances with 37. They've played three goalkeepers. One's gotten eight starts on the year. I forgot to type his name down. The other two split the other four games that they've played so far. They've kept six clean sheets with 30 saves versus 17 goals conceded. They average about 417 passes per game with an average of 47% possession. So it's a team that seems like, style-wise at least, plays very similar to how the Rowdies have been playing the last few, most of this season. Anything you saw in there that jumps out as something that could cause us some trouble or something we have to keep an eye on?
Well, it's interesting because, obviously, we were their first game of the year. Because they didn't play the week before on the opening kickoff of the whole league. They had a bye week that week. So we were their first opponent. So on one hand, everything that we remember about them, just wipe it clean from your memory. Because they played a different formation in that game. They actually played, and this is kind of funny, isn't it? They played a three-back system in the home opener, in our home opener. So, it's funny, that was, we didn't realize at the time, how significant that was as far as seeing a different team play that style. They don't play that way anymore. If you go through the games, obviously they do little tweaks, but obviously graphic designers and league people, when they're typing out the reports and things like that, are going to put little different spins on the formation, 3-5-2 versus a 3-2-3-2 or whatever. They're always going to do something a little bit different, like a 4-1-4-1 compared to a 5-4-1 or something like that. People are going to put little twists on it from one week to the next, but they've played pretty much the same formation for the last six straight games, which is different because before then they had kind of flip-flop a couple different times with formations. And now they're playing a five-back system. And suddenly they're having lots of success with that. So I think that's going to be one thing. And it's funny because it kind of piggybacks off of what we've been talking about. Teams that play defensive and then hit you on a counterattack. That might end up being what this game ends up kind of looking like, which, of course, again, Pittsburgh has been kind of a house of horrors for us as far as, we can never seem to get points away up there at the beautiful Highmark Stadium. So, that's going to be something that's going to be noteworthy this week, is can we break this team down with the flair that we've seen the last couple of weeks, because that's what it's going to take. And of course, obviously being solid defensively is a given, but I think that's one of the things that keeps up with me. I'll say this, pretty much almost all the players that we saw in that first game is pretty much who they've been playing most of the year.
Mm-hmm.
So the players themselves are all the same. It's not like they've completely changed, obviously some of these teams like Charlotte, it's like the team almost looks like somebody completely different. Look at the Rowdies last year. By the year end, we were a completely different team than what the Rowdies started as on week one. This is not the case with Pittsburgh. And so it's going to be interesting to see, they're going to be significantly better. So I hope the team doesn't come into this game thinking that they know what Pittsburgh looks like. They know what Pittsburgh plays like. They know those players and things. No, just wipe it. Wipe it clean. This is just considered a fresh opponent, like you've never played them before. Don't take anything for granted in that context. So, I've been saying for weeks now, I thought Pittsburgh has been a sleeper team. I said it almost 2 months ago. This is a team that I knew was going to be fine, because the only reason why they weren't in the position that they were in as far as being in a playoff or in a higher playoff seeds was just because sheer lack of games played, because their season I think is backloaded on the back end. I don't think it's middle late. I think it's actually back end,
right,
if memory serves. But I knew this team had the quality to become a contender, and the fact that they've done it and the fact that they still have games in hand on almost everybody around them really, I think, goes to show more about who they are. And I mean, honestly, let's face it. This is the toughest game you could make an argument for that. I think this is a harder game than Ottawa as far as opponents go. So I think this is the hardest game we've played in at least a month and a half almost.
All right,
coming up
so
here.
We both sound a little wary about this one. Let's make some predictions. What do you think is going to be the result this weekend?
I'm going 1-1.
That's exactly what was in my head.
Yeah, I think it'll be really difficult to keep us out of the net. I think if I'm taking guesses, I bet Tejada somehow finds a way to score one of those just infamous trademark scrappy goals. Oh, speaking of, wait a second. No, Tejada's not here this week, right?
Is this the week he's gone?
No. What week is he gone? Oh, see, this is where being a professional show with proper game notes would actually,
I think it's next week.
Is it next week?
I think it's the home game. He's not here.
Ooh. You know, it's funny because the date that sticks out in my head is July 15th. So obviously I'm all screwed up. But, oh, man, that's right. See, I wish I had thought about that 24 hours ago and I would have put it in my notes.
Here we go. Hang on one second. I got it right here.
We're all busy Googling things right now, trying to catch what the Olympic date is.
He will return home July 15th. So he'll play this weekend and then he's gone. He won't be there for the he won't be there next weekend at Al Lang.
Okay. So he leaves the 15th.
Yeah. Yeah. He goes.
Okay. So I did have the date right. I just had it flip flopped in my head what that meant. Okay. Good. So my mind hasn't completely gone away yet.
You'll get there, trust me.
Oh, I know. Have you met my dad? And the irony of that statement is, of course, this is the same podcast that a few minutes ago I was like, I've got good genes.
Yeah. Yeah, 1-1 feels about right to me. It would be nice to squeak out of there with maybe another stoppage time penalty or winner right before the end of the game. But a draw would not surprise me. Then again, we keep saying a draw and they go out there and win. So, maybe we'll just keep it up and hope that it works out that way. Anything else we want to throw in there? We've gone through all our stuff, but we're right at about an hour anyway.
I'll just say this idea that we're going to go up there and sneak in this late penalty. No, that's what happens to us, Matt. Have you not been paying attention for the last decade?
Yeah, but this year it seems to be happening. Especially if the opposing goalkeeper wastes a bunch of time.
Yeah. All I know is that if you never get a chance to visit Pittsburgh, it is great. Highmark is a beautiful stadium. It's a pleasure to watch there. Steel Army are really cool. And it's funny because I actually disagree with your sandwich selection for what represents Pittsburgh, because I actually am not a fan of Premonti. My big thing up there when I visited is Carson Street Deli.
Oh, I thought you were going to go with the cold cheese pizza.
No.
Have you seen that?
No.
So there's a place there. There's at least one. There might be more where they make
it's like there might be more. They might be repopulating.
Well, it might be more than one place doing this, but they make their pizza by cooking the crust and the sauce. And then they just put on, like, once it comes out of the oven, then they put on the cheese and the toppings and all that stuff is cold. And I kind of want to try it, but I don't want to say that I want to try it, but I just did. So, oh, well. Well, the funny thing is, when it comes to like sandwiches for down here, like I don't even love Cuban sandwiches that much. Cause I'm not a muck. I don't like pickles or mustard really at all. So, I don't have a ton of them, but, it was either that or the grouper sandwich. And I feel like the Cubans more identified with the Bay Area.
Yeah, it was. Yeah. I, how do you not go with a Cuban sandwich for what defines Tampa Bay? Like, I can't think of any other sandwich that would do it now. And I know you had this debate on Twitter about the debate between Cuban sandwich and pub subs. I, for one, disagree with your assessment on it doesn't count as a Tampa Bay sandwich. I actually 100% wholeheartedly believe and agree that it's a Tampa Bay area sandwich. And And for me, if I had to pick between, and here you go, we're going to put this up tomorrow as a Twitter poll. What sandwich better defines Tampa Bay? And I absolutely would take a pub sub over the Cuban
It's not like public invented sub sandwiches. People have been making those across the country for years. Like the Cuban sandwich is a specific sandwich created by the Cuban and Italian immigrants in Tampa Bay. Like a sub is just a sub. Like, okay, cool. Publix makes good ones. If someone says pub sub, you don't think Tampa, you think Publix.
Matt. Publix
science
perfected the sub sandwich.
Detweiler's is better anyway down here.
Don't make me go and cause a lot of enemies by saying Miami perfected the Cuban, but
Miami's not even, but whatever. Maybe they'll serve them in Fort Lauderdale at Outer Miami FC Stadium.
Outer Miami FC. I love it.
That's what their name ought to be. They're not playing in Miami. All right, we're getting off topic here, which is what we do, kind of. So let's wrap this up. Are we love yous for this week? Anyone in particular?
You go first, because I actually had a thought yesterday, and I am having a fleeting moment at the moment.
I'm going to channel my my day job, just because it's starting to come back into focus again for the next year. And I'm going to send a shout out to Alexander Hamilton, mortally wounded on this day 215 years ago in a duel with Aaron Burr in New Jersey, because New Jersey ruins everything. Steven, what do you got?
My we love you is I'm going to take Rowdy's ex player. I'm going with Pascal Millian.
Ooh.
Because Lakeland Tropics UPSL team won a trophy, I believe, this last weekend, if memory serves correct.
Oh, yeah. And they beat somebody.
Boca Raton?
Oh, yeah. Did Ocho Cinco end up playing in that game?
I can't tell you. But I am absolutely going to give credit to where credit's due for any former player, and I love the fact that he's at least within an arm's reach of us in Lakeland. But yeah, my we love you is to Pascal Millian. Congratulations to the Lakeland Tropics or Florida Tropics, whichever, you know, branch or version that is.
Tropics in general. Night.
Yeah, Tropics in general. Congratulations to them. Trophies are always impressive to win. I think they even went something crazy like undefeated this year, didn't they? That's unbelievable.
They didn't even draw any games, I don't think.
I think they like legitimately went like 15-0, like when you include playoffs. Like, that's incredible.
Right.
So
now it's like the regional playoffs, I think, are next, regional championship, because they won the state title.
I have no idea how UPSL is set up, so I couldn't even begin to tell you what the next thing is. And the sad part is, of course, too, isn't it true that like none of this really counts for Open Cup qualifying? Because I think for them, they actually have to go through the Open Cup qualifying like mini tournament, right? So like the league results and the trophies they win in UPSL don't mean anything.
I mean, I'm still trying to figure out the new CONCACAF thing, so I have no
idea. Oh my gosh, yeah.
The Battle Royale, like the Hex is reversed. I don't know.
So as long as we're off topic, I will say this. I actually like the new qualifying setup, because I think it does give a better chance for a minnow to make it into the World Cup than the way that it's set up right now.
Yeah. The one thing I saw someone post about it is, you know, you kind of have those borderline teams, like Canada is a borderline between being rated high enough in the FIFA ratings to not be put into that like group stage or hex, whatever they're going to do now. Are they better off trying to win the friendlies and win the games that would increase their ratings, or are they better off kind of tanking that to stay at the top of the so-called minnow league, where they're going to play more games and they're only going to have a shot at the playoff part for that last spot. But it might be a better chance for them overall than if they were, you know, trying to qualify higher enough to begin with. Like,
Yeah, that's
is this gonna be
thing.
A thing like, where they might start dominating that little thing? So like, while it sounds like they're the Caribbean teams are gonna have a better chance, that Canada is just gonna kind of coast along and be in that playoff spot and might actually get into a World Cup every couple years now.
Yeah, and that's the thing, right? It's like it was brought to our attention that based on the time frames that like St. Kitts and Nevis would have actually they were the sixth highest ranked CONCACAF team at one point. Like, and if this had been in place in the last World Cup cycle, supposedly they actually would have been in. I think Trinidad would not have been.
Right.
You know, I think that was pointed out on Twitter. I think it was actually by like the St. Kitts coach or something like that.
Nevis, coincidentally, being the home island of my We Love You this week.
Heck, go figure.
Nice callback.
But yeah, I mean, that was the thing is, if you are St. Kitts, though, would you prefer to be in the hex and try and finish at least fourth? Or would you rather not be in the top six and go through the mini tournament thing, which is a lot more games, but a chance of the playoff type round for that fourth seed? So against the fourth seed, I honestly am not sure if there really is a right answer to that, if we're being honest.
Yeah, it'll be interesting to see how this plays out.
And like I said, it's so crazy of an idea that it's going to be really hard for people to adjust to that, and I get it, but I think give it an actual cycle, maybe two, and I think you might actually find this works.
That wasn't even my favorite CONCACAF news of the week.
Oh, gosh, what was the number one story for CONCACAF this week, besides the fact that the women just, you know, kick ass?
I forget what court it was, but Jack Warner was ordered to repay $76 million
yes!
that he had embezzled.
That was hilarious.
I thought maybe he was just being fined 1 year for his, you know, every year that he's been alive, since that's how long he's been corrupt. But, man, you hate to see it. I hate Jack Warner. All right, let's wrap this up. We'll be back next week. Thanks again to Wolfface for the theme music, to Radio St. Pete, to Shamrock, where I pretty much live for the last month. My family is still getting used to seeing me again. Thank you to you guys for continuing to make time for us, either listening live or on podcast. If you can, please share, subscribe, rate, and review. It helps put us out in front of more people and makes our numbers get bigger. If you'd like to support us on an ongoing basis, you can follow, go to Patreon, patreon.com/unusedsubspod, and find a level of giving that fits your lifestyle, whatever. Thank you, as always, to our sponsor, Roughneck Scarves, the official scarf supplier of MLS, USL, and US Soccer. Get custom scarves for your group or team at roughneckscarves.com. Steven, I won't see you this weekend, but I will see you next one, and I will talk to you next week.
I can't wait, and I can't wait to see the massive group that Skyway Casuals are bringing up. This is going to be a party for throwback night. The supporter section is going to be absolutely on fire, and I cannot wait for what that game's going to look like. Speaking of fire, by the way, just as a last off-topic subject.
Must be nice to have $65 million to buy out of your crappy stadium. Is that what you're going to say?
Well, no, I was going to say that I really love smoke bombs, even if like we have, you know, 1 in 300 that are maybe defective.
We had plenty at Shamrock over the weekend for club and country. I'll just say that all of which I hope USL headquarters isn't watching our Twitter, because I'm sure they'd try and figure out a way to fine us for what was going on in the parking lot of the Shamrock. Number one, none of them were cold pull. Number two, all of them were handheld. Over and over, like
you hooligans.
There's many a picture in the Sarasota newspaper.
That's awesome.
It's good stuff. All right, we'll talk to you guys next week. We'll talk to each other next week as well. Thank you guys for tuning in. See ya.
Go Rowdies.
The Rowdies were there, the Rowdies were there, they kicked the wall around.